Spectacular Diagnostics.
Hello and welcome back to another episode installment of Cycling Mo, your cycling informant. Today I am delighted to be joined by Edward Toons of Tech Trek Segafredo. Edward, how are we?
We are good, thank you.
Okay, so we're going to do something slightly different on this podcast. We are going to look at Edward's cycling life, and we're going to look back at his 10 best moments in cycling in a kind of nice little order, from least important to the most important. Oh, I'm sure they're all very important. Right, so Edward, a little bit of background for the people at home. What age are you now?
28.
How would you describe yourself as a cyclist?
Like type of rider or?
Yeah, well, like type of rider, yeah.
Not a slow guy who likes the classics.
And what age were you when you turned pro?
23.
Well remembered, good stuff. Okay, let's get started on the list. So in at number 10, we're going all the way back to 2010, Mont-et-Château.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was actually my first time that I started to realize that maybe I could go further in cycling than I was thinking, because before that I won some kermesses, but that was my first year under 23. And to win a stage in Mont-et-Château was a pretty big achievement back then, and it was for me the first moment that I realized, like, hey, maybe I'm not too bad, and maybe I can have some ambition to turn professional one day. So it was actually a bit the start of me believing to make a pro career.
And winning a race like that in your first year at under 23, that's quite difficult, yeah?
Yeah, it's not so easy, because you compete against guys who are... Some guys are 3 years older than you are, and so it's a pretty big step between juniors and under 23. And then to win a race in the first year was for me already a pretty big achievement, but then also Mont-et-Château is and was one of the biggest under 23 races, and the professional teams give a lot of attention to these kind of races. So for me it was a big achievement. Also, if you look at the guys who were in the top five, there was Finney, Degenkolb, Piazza Bol. So it was a pretty nice race to win as a young guy who nobody knows. And for me, it was the first moment. And I think maybe for a lot of people that they discovered me as a good rider.
Who were you riding for?
VL Technics was the team. It was it's a small Belgian team. It still exists, but it still has a different name. GM Recycling, they are called now, I think. But yeah, I've spent all my under 23 years there, so 4 years at VL Technics before I turned professional at Topsport Vlaanderen. So for me, it was a good team to be at that moment, because they gave me the freedom and I was also studying. So it was not so easy to do the combination, but I'm still very thankful to those people who discovered me there and gave me the chances, and I'm still in contact with the team director there. So it's a nice story.
And amazingly, a couple of years later, same race, you won a time trial.
Yeah. Actually, it's still a pretty big disappointment, because I won the time trial and after that I was in the yellow jersey. But then we had a stage finishing on Kleusberg, I think, and my chain broke in that race. So I lost the yellow jersey because of that mechanical. And I think actually I could have won the general classification, but... because of the mechanical, I lost quite some time in that one stage, which was a disappointment. But it was nice to win a TT back then. I think it was in front of Van Baarle. So now it's hard to repeat that. But yeah, there was deep down inside of me once a good time trialist.
Okay, then fast forward, number 9 from 2010, from your first year as a under 23 all the way to this season and your win at the Primus Classic. So that's nice and fresh in the memory. Talk us through the last, when did you attack? Kind of maybe 3K to go?
Yeah, it was like 3.5 to go. For me, it's one of the nicest, I mean, it's not the biggest race I've won, but for me, it gives me a really nice feeling because it was the way I won it. Also, the moment on the year, there were some guys preparing the Worlds, so we were pretty close to Worlds and they were riding there. And then to win a race with that kind of final was for me really satisfying. And yeah, it was just also the teamwork was amazing because we were there with the team and it was like a bit of fresh wind in the team after a bad first half of the year actually. And yeah, we were there with kind of the classics team. And we just raced the race we wanted. We were very aggressive doing attacks and it looked like it was going to be a bunch sprint. And I still remember I was talking a bit with Jasper Steven that I didn't feel really confident because it was already a hard race and it was pretty warm. So the legs were not so fresh anymore. And I told him like, I don't feel really confident for the sprint. And we were doubting a bit what to do, and suddenly he launched his attack with 7k to go, I think. So I thought, okay, we're gonna try to protect his breakaway, and we try to ride a bit in the way of the chasing teams. And then one moment Mats Pedersen screamed in the radio, "Go Eddie, go, you have a gap." So I looked back and I was a bit surprised, and then I thought, okay, I go to Jasper and I bridge to him. Then I thought, come on, now we go together, try to reach the finish. But after one pull, he let me go alone. And for first moment, I thought like, it's going to be a hard job. But the director, Steven de Jong, also told us before the race, it's a pretty good finish for a late attack because you have some corners in the last 3K. And actually, this was one of the first things that went through my head when I was alone, that it was a good finish for a late attack. And yeah, I still thought I wouldn't make it because the last straight was pretty long and headwind and pretty hard, but it was super nice also that they came really close. It gave the spectators also something to bite their nails on.
So it was Sagan, it was a small group, Sagan and a couple of others who tried to get across to you, and they were quite close.
Yeah.
At no point did you think, I'll wait, or was it just, no, I need to go full?
Actually, I remember looking back in the race and I thought, I have a pretty good gap. But then when I watched the images back from TV, I thought like, actually, I have had a really small gap. So in my head, the gap looked a bit bigger. So maybe that was the reason why I still went on, but I'm happy that I pushed through until the finish line.
What about the final 200 meters? So Sagan launches the kind of the lead out for Ackermann, and Ackermann goes, and you're empty, you're crawling. You know, you are the speed difference between the two was crazy. What was that last 200 like? Like, just how deep were you going?
Actually, already the last K was actually already pretty hard. I mean, you don't push the super high values, but I mean, because it was a 3.5K effort, you're pushing, around 500 watts the whole time. So it's not like a sprint, but in the end, I mean, it looked more impressive from the air. Or the helicopter images, because I didn't realize how fast they were coming. I just had in my head I have to go to the finish because I know that the bunch who is sprinting can come really fast. But at that moment, I didn't realize they were coming so fast. And actually, I was a bit surprised, like, 2 meter after the line. Ackermann passed me on high speed, but yeah, I was pretty. It was a relief that I reached the finish line. I could stop pedaling because my legs were really done.
And you didn't even have time for a celebration. I mean, come on.
Yeah, not really. I was thinking about it the last kilometer, but I also looked back a couple of times and I thought, like, I don't want to take the risk to lose a race, like, you know, put your hands in the air and then lose by like a centimeter or something. So I wanted to be sure of the victory first, and then the rest would come.
And what was the story about free beer? Did the organizers give away free beer?
The organizer said if a Belgian guy wins the race, we will give 1,000 free beers for the fans who were there. So, I think they were happy that I won the race.
So you were very popular.
Maybe not the brewery because it costed them some money, but yeah, I think they were happy.
Brilliant. Okay, so number 8. Your transfer to Trek Segafredo. So we're talking end of 2015 after 2 seasons with Topsport Vlaanderen, 2 very successful seasons with Topsport, you move to the World Tour with Trek. So how did the move come about?
I had a really good season in my second year with Topsport Vlaanderen. So that was pretty... I was like pretty sure to make the next step, but still, it was a dream to ride in a World Tour team, and actually I had some options there, so it was a bit of luxury at that time. But I chose for a Trek Segafredo then, and yeah, as a young guy to come into that team with Cancellara and Frank Schleck and like big names where before I was watching the TV and saw them as kind of idols, and then they were my teammates. So it was for me a big moment, and I think an important step also in my career to go into the World Tour.
How does it actually feel to change teams as a professional cyclist? You know, you're not a kid, you're a grown-up adult. That idea of moving away from a team who you must have felt very safe at Topsport, lots of friends, all kind of local riders, and then to move away to a big international team. How did that feel, like your first kind of training camps and stuff?
Yeah, first you feel, I mean, it also feels a bit weird because we had a really nice group at Topsport Vlaanderen. So in the beginning, you're also a bit like, oh, I'm going to miss this atmosphere with all Flemish guys, all young guys. But on the other hand, you're so motivated to go for the next step in your career. And course, in the beginning, you're just a guy who's quiet and watching all stuff. It didn't really help that I, on my first training camp with the team, I crashed and took also Cancellara out. So that was maybe not the best way to come into the team. But yeah, they didn't. I mean, he didn't. It was something that happened. It was not really my fault. It was just a big ice or wet spot on the road. But yeah, in the end, actually, pretty fast I felt good in the team, because also there are quite some Belgian people in the staff. I knew Dirk de Mol very good. He was actually a bit the guy who brought me to that team, and he also tried to protect a bit the young Belgian riders, because he really likes us. And for me, it was, I was feeling at home at that team pretty fast.
Okay, number 7, GP Zottegem, 2014, your first year as a pro. Talk us through that win.
Yeah, actually, it's not so easy to remember how it went, but...
Because I've looked at the results and it wasn't a sprint. I know that.
It's a bit the same story as the victory in Mons-et-Château. It was my first victory as a pro. And it was also a UCI race. So it's not easy, I mean, to win a race as a first-year pro. I mean, these days, okay, you have a lot of guys doing it, but for me, it was not such an easy job. So I was really happy with that victory, and yeah, I think it was we were in front with a group of about seven, eight guys. I remember De Haas was there and Jasper de Best, and there was a small kicker on with 3K to go or something. And the Haas wanted to attack, but his chain got blocked, so he crashed. So then we pushed through with three guys, I think De Trooijer, me and Zico Wytens, who was my teammate back then in Topsport. And actually, De Trooijer and me had a little gap, and Zico Wytens came back to us, and actually Zico just started to pull for the last 2K, and then I could win the sprint. For the win, so it was yeah, it was really nice, a nice moment, and yeah, the first win as a professional is always nice.
Yeah, then we go to somewhere quite different from your first win as a pro. We go to Tour de France 2016, stage one, fifth place finish in the sprint, and you're on the podium with the white jersey. I mean, that must be just an incredible feeling.
Yeah, it's actually still one of the, for me, one of the nicest moments in my career, because no doubt for me the Tour de France is the biggest race there is in cycling and there is in the world. And that year was also my first year at track, and actually I was not really supposed to do the tour, but yeah, I was going well, and I won a stage in Tour of Belgium, I think, and I did the Dauphiné, and the Dauphiné, they saw also I was climbing pretty well. So back then in the Dauphiné, they said, "Ah, we will put you on the long list, but normally you're not gonna ride. It's just if something happens." And then the closer we got to the tour, they said, "Yeah, maybe we're thinking about it." And in the end, I made it in the tour team, so it was a pretty special moment already to start my first big tour, the Tour de France, and then yeah, to just go the first day in your first big tour in the Tour de France to be already fifth in the bunch sprint was for me already something pretty big. And then I went to the bus, and then they said I had the best young rider jersey and I could go to the podium. So for me, it was really, yeah. Back then, you're like, "Whoa, what's happening here?" And you're standing on the podium in the Tour de France, which is something pretty unique, I think. So it was, yeah, it was a super nice moment.
I think I read that you didn't actually know, like you were good, like you didn't know when you finished. I think I read somewhere that you assumed Sagan was under.
I remember that I was thinking like, yeah, Sagan, he's only 1 year older than me, so I was thinking like, for sure he will also be still in the competition for best young rider. I didn't really think about it back then, but then at the team bus they told me, so it was really nice. Also the next day to ride, it was only one stage, but to ride a stage in a white jersey in the Tour de France was pretty nice.
Do you remember the sprint finish? I've got a vague memory of it.
Utah Beach, I remember it super stressful, and positioning 50K to go, and the positions didn't really change until 1K to go, and it was a super fast finish, a little bit downhill. I think there also was a crash, I think. But I just remember I sprinting, I came into the wheel of Kittel, and I thought, okay, maybe I can try to launch my sprint, but then I thought, oh, he launched his sprint, and I thought, okay, I'll better stay here. And then that was enough. But yeah, it was really nice to be there up with the biggest sprinters then of the world, so it was nice.
You mentioned you had good legs. I mean, that season, second in a stage in Paris-Nice, third in Dwars de Vlaanderen, fourth in Chaix Dupuy. You won a stage of the Belgian Tour, all in your first season at Trek. I mean, you were going well, weren't you? That was a real kind of good patch for you.
Yeah. I think I continued actually a bit the line that I started at Topsport Vlaanderen in my second year there. I had really a lot of top 10 spots. I had some victories. Second also in Dwars de Vlaanderen, second in Scheldeprijs back then. So already my second year at Tops for Vlaanderen was very good. So back then I was really happy that I could go on with that, you know, on that way. And also in races of World Tour level, like Paris-Nice, I had some good stages there. And I mean, back then it gave me a really good good feeling that I was keeping the progression I started at when I became professional.
You mentioned the Dauphiné. I'm trying to remember, was that when you went in the breakaway on the day of Mont Ventoux?
There was one day I went in the break, but that day I didn't finish so well, I remember. But I think the first stage, well, I was second there. There were some gravel roads, and then I had a late attack, and they caught me with like 200 meters to go. But then second day I had to do the lead out for Bonifazio, and then third day I went in a break on the with the move on too, but we didn't make it until the finish. At least I didn't make it until the finish.
Was that a plan? I know, we're going to climb Ventoux. Let's go for the break.
I don't know. Back then, I wasn't really thinking about that stuff. You know, I was just having fun and like, oh, we're in Paris-Nice, it's the Ventoux. Oh, maybe I tried to go in the break. It was a bit the Top Sport Flanders style of racing. You know, everybody tries to go in the break. Everybody tries to sprint. It's just seeing where you get. And it was nice.
Okay, number five, your transfer to Sunweb. So we're talking end of 2017. You've had two very successful years at Trek. I suppose the big question is why move?
It was a bit... I was happy at Trek. I felt good there for 2 years. But there were some teams interested after 17, because I had quite a good year. I was talking with some teams and I wanted maybe to try to have a bit more opportunities in the classic races. I didn't really feel that Trek wanted to keep me, like it was not their priority to keep me. That was a feeling I had. But looking back at it, I think it also was a bit of my own mistake that I didn't talk enough to the team manager. I let my own manager do the job and didn't talk enough myself with the manager of the team about how I saw things and about how he saw things. It was a decision I made back then. And at Sunweb, I mean, they had a really good team and I knew some guys there. And I thought it would be a good move also towards the classics to have a little bit more freedom there. But in the end, it turned out to be not the best move I made. So it was not an easy year then. And I had some bad luck also with quite some crashes and sickness in the classics. So it was a bit of everything that came together. So it was... in the list of top 10 moments, it was an important moment, so that's why it's in the list. But it didn't have the good effect on my career, I think.
Now, obviously, you're going to be completely respectful towards Sunweb. You've probably got many friends still there. It didn't work out. Sunweb are renowned for having long-term plans that they do not change. Some riders like that. Other riders find it very frustrating. Is that one of the kind of things that you found a bit hard, the idea of we will sprint with this guy and we're not changing plans?
Yeah, it's a bit, it has two sides. On some moments, if everything goes perfectly, it's a good strategy. But during the year, if things change, there are guys injured or there are sickness, then in my eyes, it's not bad to review what is happening and maybe make a new plan. But yeah, it's their way of working, and I mean, it worked kind of a long time with some big riders. I mean, they won the Giro with Dumoulin. They they were also second. Dumoulin was second in the Tour when I was there, so it was working quite well for some riders. But for me, it didn't work out.
And how did the leaving after just one season? How did that come about? Was that them? Was it you? Was it a bit of both?
It was a bit of both. I mean, I was feeling that it didn't really work out with the team, but I mean, they also felt that the cooperation was not as we expected. I mean, I was not I didn't go to Sunweb to leave already after 1 year, but I mean, I think it was a good and a grown-up's decision from both parties to be realistic enough and to see that it was not the cooperation that we expected. And I mean, I think it was better for me and also better for the team to make the decision to split. And yeah, I was happy that I could go back also to track, because it was an environment that I already knew a bit, so that I didn't have to again adapt to all new things. So that was also for me an important aspect.
Okay, number four, we're getting into the real nitty-gritty now. 2017 Paris-Roubaix, 8th place. Some people might be surprised that you've included a race where you finished 8th. I kind of know the background behind it, so tell us, why have you included this? Why is this one of your big, big moments?
Yeah, first of all, it's for me, it's Roubaix is also, it's a monument, and I always, I mean, over the years, I've had some good results in classic races, but in Flanders and Roubaix, I never made it to a really top spot, which maybe at one moment you start doubting a bit, maybe those races are too hard for me or too long for me or stuff like that. But that year I was coming back from my injury that I broke my back, and then to finish top 10 in the monument for me was actually a pretty big achievement. Even without breaking my back, it would have been for me one of the big achievements that I'm most proud of. But also the 8th place was maybe, it's a top 10 spot, but that day I had really super good legs. And afterwards, I think physically I was maybe strong enough even to go for the victory in that race. But to win a race, there's a lot more aspects than only physically. So there's also tactics, there's also riding smart and stuff like that. So, but physically, I had a really good day back then. And in the final, I remember that Steven was with a group in front. So also we could not really, I mean, it was not up to us to attack on that moment. So I was a bit blocked, but I mean, back then I was totally okay with it. But after that race, I realized like, maybe this is a race that one day I if everything falls into the right spot, if everything works 100% perfect, that I maybe can win this race one day. And for me, that's, I mean, it's an 8th spot, which maybe doesn't look so fantastic, but it's more the feeling that you have the feeling that you can maybe one day win this race. And for me, that's something that is more important and can give you a lot of motivation.
What you don't mention is the fact that you spent a lot of energy working earlier in the race. We saw you on the front quite a lot, working for Degenkolb and Stuyven. So you already used up quite a lot of energy.
Yeah, it was pretty funny actually, because I remember that I was just going to every section and I was like, okay, I cannot drop here, I have to hang on. And we were going further in the race, and then we were going towards the last sector, and I was thinking like, oh, I have to hang on. And I remember, I mean, we were in the second group, but we were not super far, I think, from the first group. And Roulants was attacking on that last sector. And I was going to his wheel and I was thinking like, is this an attack? You know, I was feeling still really good. And then it was like that moment I realized like, fuck, I'm maybe better than I was thinking. You know, I was always busy with don't drop. But after the last sector, I was feeling still pretty good. And I was thinking, maybe I should try to attack. But then Jasper was in the front, so it was not up to us. So it was a bit, yeah, it's a weird switch in your head when you go to don't drop to... Yeah, feeling better than the other guys in the group, so it was really nice. And I also went to the velodrome, and I did the lead out for Degenkolb actually on the sprint, and there were only two guys who managed to come over me, which were Greipel and Demar, I think. So it also shows that I was still one of the most fresh guys in that group. So
all fans want to know, come on, what's it like going into the velodrome? Okay, you weren't riding for first, but you were riding for like sixth place. So, you know, you're still sprinting. What's that feeling like? All the fans, the historic velodrome.
Yeah, it's super nice. I mean, in a situation where you still need to think about the result, it's a different feeling. But I also already finished a couple times when you can like enjoy a bit the moment. So the first time is the most special one to reach the velodrome, but every year it's yeah, for me it's something legendary, and yeah, not a lot of people can have the feeling to finish Roubaix on the velodrome with all the people there. And actually the most nice moment is to get off your bike and just sit a bit, breathe out in the middle of the velodrome there, and it's it's always a nice moment to finish Roubaix and you didn't crash or you didn't have big trouble. So it's a nice moment.
I always find that a bit strange about Roubaix. You know, it's the only race where all the riders are together after the race, all sitting in the middle, teams are there. It feels nice, like totally different from other races.
Yeah, it's also nice for the people there, because they see like what's happening with the Soigneurs, and or how do people celebrate the victory, or how they react on a big disappointment, stuff like that. I mean, you cannot go away quickly inside of the bus, so you see really the emotions coming up there, and it's nice for the people.
Okay, talking about emotions, number three, not a happy memory. So that Tour de France where you were wearing the white jersey, later on, a terrible crash. You mentioned earlier you broke your back. You know, talk us through, well, maybe not talk us through the crash, but how much of an impact did that have on your career?
Yeah, it's also not a good moment, but it's one of the moments that made my career how it is. It's hard. For me, it's still a bit hard to say, because it was a big crash and it had a big effect actually I don't know if it had a big effect on my career. I was going really well, like you said before, I had great results in my first year with Trek, and then I had the crash in the Tour. So for me it's like a big question mark, would have been maybe even a bit better if I wouldn't had the crash, or maybe it also made me a bit stronger. I don't know, maybe mentally to work harder for my goals. So it's a bit a question mark. I remember the first moments I thought I wouldn't be able to race again, and then in the end the rehab went pretty well, and I also had a okay season. A pretty good season the year after the crash. So, it's for me a bit of question mark. Would I have been maybe even better without the crash? But Dirk De Mol always told me, riders who have a big crash or a big accident, they always come back stronger. But yeah, I mean, he said that to me when I was in rehab, and back then I was thinking, you're just saying this to motivate me. But yeah, on the other hand, it also made me realize that sometimes you have to work hard to come back. And like now I'm paying a lot of attention to core stability training because I have to do it for my back. And maybe I would not have done this if I didn't crash. And maybe that would also have made me a bit less in some aspects of cycling. But yeah, it's a bit... a question mark, what would have been if I didn't have that crash.
How long were you in hospital?
Actually, I was home, I mean, home quite fast. At first, I was 2 days in France before they flew me back, and then they did the operation. And I think then I was 1 week in hospital after the operation before I could go back home. So actually, it was pretty okay. But then I slept for a long time still in a bed, like a hospital bed, downstairs at home. And the first 2 months, it was pretty hard because you're like a baby. You cannot do anything yourself. They have to help you to wash and stuff like that. So it's not really really nice on that moment.
And just how grumpy were you throughout that period?
I think it was quite okay. The only annoying thing is that the Tour de France was still going on, and you were there, you were going well, and then you're laying in the bed, you cannot do anything, but you see still other guys getting good results, and then you think like, should have been there, and I really wanted to reach the Champs-Élysées also. So for me, it was pretty hard to... I mean, I'm a guy who likes to watch cycling, so I wanted to watch the race, but on the other hand, it was not so nice to watch it because I wanted to be there. But on the other hand, you also realize that it's just cycling also. So
I remember the next season, for quite a long time, you used to say that you could still feel your back and you were in... I don't know if it was pain, but maybe a little bit of discomfort. How long did that go on? Like, does it still happen?
I think in 17 after the classics, they did an operation to take out the screws and pins that they put in after the crash. And after that, actually, the discomfort became really a lot better. So yeah, I still feel that I have a bit less mobility in my back, and I still feel that if I don't do my exercises, that it's just the level that I broke my back is less mobile. So the other regions in my back, they compensate a bit the mobility, and that's why I don't really have pain on the level that I broke my back, but more pain in my lower back because they have to work to get more mobility and to keep my back working well. Like compensation for the part that has been broken. So it's more the other parts of my back that are suffering more because of that one part is not working anymore.
Okay, let's go happier. Number two, your victory in the Binc Banc Tour, as it was then, your first World Tour victory.
Yeah, and also my first victory after breaking my back, so it was a bit two things in one.
What was that, 2017?
17, yeah.
So what taught me through that? I remember the finish. I remember it was quite a kind of, you were coming through like a house, like lots of houses, and like there was big riders there. There was Sagan, you know, it wasn't just like you beat nobody. So Sagan was there the day before.
I was second in Ardoy the day before, yeah.
Sagan just beat you. And then when you won this, it was slightly uphill, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was slightly uphill. It was pretty bad weather also. And we had a good lead out also there with Boy van Poppel and Jasper Steven, who helped me for the sprint. And I remember Lampaert did a late attack with 2K to go or something. And the last straight there was like 1 or 1.5K. And the other teams had to pull to get Lampaert back. So we could try to stay calm and stay together. And I remember Boy van Poppel is a guy who is really good at feeling the moment where he should be and when he should go. And he has a really good lead out in the legs. And he brought me and Jasper to the front on the right moment. And Jasper did a lead out. I actually started a bit early, I think, even because I was a bit nervous. But yeah, I had a good sprint in the legs then. And for me, it was a big relief, you know, after the crash in the Tour, the rehabilitation. And then it was my first victory, and it was in a big race, a World Tour race. So it was for me like a big relief that fell off my shoulders. And that's why it's for me such a important moment in my career.
When you shouted when you crossed the line, I remember it well. It felt like it wasn't just happiness. It felt like it was like frustration. Like it felt like it was a lot of emotions just in that one shout when you go over the line. You know, it felt really kind of powerful.
Yeah, because actually, if I see a guy shouting when he crosses the finish line, I'm always thinking, "With fuck, this guy's a bit ridiculous." So back then I did it myself, but it was like, yeah, it came naturally, and it was really like something from all the work I have put in the rehabilitation, and yeah, sometimes it's just a bit of frustration. Yeah, sometimes you're a bit frustration that you're coming close to victories but you can't win, and I was so happy that day that I could win, and it was a pretty big race, so yeah, there were some emotions.
Okay, number one moment. Those who know your career could probably guess the one we've not mentioned so far. Well, some people might be surprised that it's not a victory for you, but it was the day that Topsport Vlaanderen beat the big boys.
Yeah, it was the Vlaanderen 2015, it was, I think. For me, it was one of the moments I remember that, you know, when you become a professional, I was dreaming one day to maybe ride a final in a classic race like Dwars door Vlaanderen or Omloop het Nieuwsblad or stuff like that. And it was my second year back then, and I actually that day, for me it's still a victory, because I think it may be a bit show off to say, but I think the only thing that could keep me from the victory that day was a teammate in that situation, and it happened. So I was feeling super strong that day, and actually in the final we were with four, Kwiatkowski, Van Baarle, Walijs and me, and I was pretty sure like I will win it. So I was a bit surprised when Walijs went. So yeah, of course, I mean, it's a teammate, and in the end it was a good tactic, but still for me, I had the feeling that day I was the strongest, and for me, it still feels as a victory. I mean, it's a bit of pity that I don't have it really on my palmarès, but it was also the first moment that I realized, like, one day I can win races like this, and I could have won, so it came earlier than I ever thought, and that was for me the day that I was like, okay, I want to win a race like this once in my career, so I hope it's still gonna happen.
That's interesting, because I think we all just assumed it was a decision that you and Valais had made together, that he would move and then they would cover and then tire them out and you win the sprint. So it wasn't planned.
No, not really. It's some inside information there. I'm not gonna discuss it here, but for me, it was really a pity that I couldn't win. But in the end, I mean, it was a perfect tactic. It turned out to be a perfect tactic, and we finished first and second. So, for a team like Topsport Vlaanderen, I think it was a huge day, because it's also I think their service course is located 1 kilometer from the finish, and to beat the world champion, because Kwiatkowski was world champion, was for those young guys of Topsport Vlaanderen a pretty big achievement.
If I remember correctly, it was quite a long distance breakaway, wasn't it?
We went 50k to go, I think, on Tijenberg. We bridged to Wallace, who was the last guy from the early break that only went after 90k, actually, I think. So, we went 50k to go, Tijenberg, and then we still had Quaremont, Patersberg,
Everybody watching expected Kwiatkowski in particular to drop everybody, maybe on Patersberg, you know.
Actually, on that day, before the race, they said, if you're in the front, I mean, don't work with those guys. Make sure you get over the hills and then you can start working. But I remember that on the Tijenberg, I think I was first guy, and after the Tijenberg, there were some attacks, and I followed them, and we bridged to Wallace. And I think Wallace didn't ride or until the top of the Patersberg. We could keep the gap pretty well. And I remember Kwiatkowski was, I think he was accelerating a bit on the Patersberg. But that day I had a feeling like, okay, he's not going to drop me here. So it gave me a lot of confidence for the rest of the race back then. And I mean, we worked well together from the Patersberg on, I remember, to the finish. And then it was, I thought it would have been a sprint. But I mean, well, I surprised the other two guys, and they didn't want to close it for each other. So yeah, in the end, it was a nice moment to be on the podium there. Together with my girlfriend, because she was the podium miss back then, and I remember we got together only a couple of weeks before that, so that was also a nice extra.
Nice. Okay, so that has been your, I don't want to say your life in cycling, because that sounds like you're finished, and you're clearly not finished, but so far, that's your top 10 moments in cycling. So, Edward Toons, thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a nice talk, and I really enjoyed it to talk about myself the whole time. No, it's actually nice to sum up 10 moments that made a big difference in your career, because it also remembers you, what you've been through, and it gives some fresh motivation to go to the next season.
Yeah, because you're not finished yet, are you?
I hope not.
I mean, you've just won a race.
Yeah, I'm
looking for more memories.
I won the Japan Cup criterium, so I mean.
Well, Edward Toons, thank you very much, and best of luck making some new memories in 2020.
Yeah, we will do.